Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 232, recorded December 29th, 2014.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Welcome to the last episode of this year.
Yeah, I guess they'll get it before, well, we will post it before the end of this year, won't we? Mm-hmm. Maybe not everyone will have listened to it, but that's okay. But anyway,
but it's the last episode of 2014.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, Happy New Year to those of you who are on the same calendar we are.
Yes, and I don't know, should we make, like, fishy resolutions? I don't know what that would be, really, but...
Yeah, I don't know how much confidence I would have in a fishy
resolution. I'd get all my fish doing aerobics 3 times a week.
And they can give it up in February.
Yeah. We'll make them a little fishy gym that can, in February, start collecting their laundry.
There you go.
How about that? Okay. So, we have 2 people today.
2 contributors. Yes, Tony. 2 Aquarimaxers.
Tony in New York, mm-hmm, and Andrew in Canada.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if we've heard from.
I believe this is Andrew's first contribution, Okay. Although not his first time participating in Aquarimax.
Oh, what else did he do?
Listen. Lots.
Oh, yes, I suppose so. Naturally. Okay, so we got Tony first.
Yes.
And he says, first, I wanted to say thank you for celebrating my new reef aquarium with me. I spent this week working on plumbing for the fish room and also worked on reinforcing the stand for the 100-gallon aquarium. This week it will be more plumbing. Very exciting. Kelly, I wanted to say it is amazingly intuitive that you decided I must be doing yoga in the fish room. In fact, I intend to use the space for yoga and meditation. See? Points for me!
Yep.
He says, do I recall correctly that your passion is belly dancing? Yes, you do. You are so good,
Points
Tony.
For Tony.
Points for Tony, yes. He says, maybe I will have to do a fish room yoga video for you, and maybe you can do an aquatic interpretive dance. I'll have to figure that one out, huh? I'll have to do like a mermaid dance or something. I don't know. Film it underwater.
Hmm.
That would be fun.
Or just film it in front of a fish tank.
You know what? I don't know how many of you have seen this, but they have mermaid school. And they have like people who have these awesome, realistic mermaid tails that you swim with, and they work kind of like, you know, like swim fins for snorkeling or scuba diving, so they're easy to swim with. And they have like restaurants with a big tank in the middle with, you know, shipwrecky stuff, and the mermaids swim around and greet all the people through the glass while they eat, and they actually have like mermaid camp. You can go and learn how to be a mermaid, and I think that would be the coolest thing ever. Okay, that's my tangent. He says, absolutely both videos will have to feature lots of fish. Guess the ball's in my court. First, Aquarimax yoga. Looking forward to giving some zen back to the fish-keeping community. And that's awesome.
That would be a really peaceful place to do yoga,
it
right?
Would be with really all those fish cool. tanks there. Yeah.
You'd never get
water.
Bored. Yeah. You'd
It'd
be holding
nice
the positions flowing. There.
And
just, yeah.
All that flowy energy.
I do want to see that. That'd be cool. Mm-hmm. See, we could have you do a dance in front of the goldfish tank. You'd do enough dancing there anyway.
Yeah, that's like my practice space. Okay, he says, here is my latest ponderable for you both today. That's a great word. Ponderable. Mm-hmm. We'll have to borrow that sometime.
Ponderable as a noun,
no less. So I am thinking I am going to mount a water delivery pipe up on the wall that will carry water to the tanks using gravity. All along its length, I am going to add PVC faucets so I can choose which tank gets filled. I very much like the idea of dripping the new water into the tanks. Each is going to have an overflow into the drain. If I drip the water slowly enough, I will not have to heat the water storage barrels, which would be a plus. So anyway, my idea is to pump the water up into the feed pipe. From there, it will trickle down into the tanks a little bit each hour. I'm trying to decide, though, what the best way is for carrying water up to the water delivery pipe. I figure that I can mount the storage barrels higher than the water delivery pipe and supply the water with gravity. Right now, I am leaning more towards using a pump. What I need is a pump that would be able to deliver water very slowly, maybe a drop a second or so, but it also needs to be able to carry that water 8 to 10 feet vertically into the water delivery pipe. I considered a marine dosing pump for the job, but frankly, that seemed like overkill. Do you have any ideas for me? I am also happy to hear ideas from our kind and ingenious Aquarimax community, too. Swimmy New Year to you, Aquarimax, and all our friends around the world. Tony from New York.
This is some kind of, like,
valve
one.
Things you could do to make the, you know, have a normal pump, bring it up, and then the valves control the flow or something?
Well, I certainly want to open it up to... Well, Tony already has opened it up to all Aquarimax, Aquarimaxers out there, you know. There are a lot of people with a lot of experiences in different areas that could help us out here. Mm-hmm. But a few things are coming to mind. One is that you're not moving a lot of water, but the head height. In other words, the amount of water, you need to pump it up pretty high.
And that, yeah, well, you said, 8 to 10 feet? Yeah.
Yeah, that takes some... Some power. Juice. Yeah. And there aren't very many pumps out there that have a combination of low flow rates and they're able to do so much head height. So that's an interesting thing. Now, the marine dosing pump that he mentioned...
I was going to ask you, what is a marine dosing pump?
Well, they use them for dosing particular things like kalkwasser or, you know... other things that they maintain
in solution. Kalkwasser. That clears it right up.
But
what's kalkwasser?
Well, there are various additives you put in saltwater tanks, right? Various trace elements. And kalkwasser is for putting calcium. Dosing calcium for, you know, reef organisms that need a lot of calcium, like the stony corals and things like that.
Okay.
And there are other things you can dose with it. That's a common one that I can think of. But... And that might be a way to go, but I don't have any experience using one of those, so I don't know that I'd be a good one to talk about it, but that may be an option. And if there are other Aquarimaxers who have done similar things, that might be good to know. One thing I've looked into, although I have not done much with it, really, but I've looked into doing aquaponics, and I eventually want to do, you know, a lot of aquaponics. But... one thing they do in aquaponics is they regularly need to pump quantities of water up from the main tank up to the beds where the plants grow, which are invariably, or generally at least, higher than the tank where the fish are.
Mm-hmm. But they kind of have to be because the plants' roots are in the top of the... Well, no, they're not in the roots. They're
It depends on which method you're using.
They're just kind of watered with it.
If you're using a method where you have a bed of... substrate like lightweight expanded clay aggregate or something in the beds where the roots are, you have the water pumped up from a tank that's below it, and they flood those plant beds, and then it drains out.
Okay.
And there are a couple of different ways to do that, and one of them is you just put it on a timer, and basically you have a pump that will pump water faster than it will drain from the tank, but in all of them they have a drain. And so inlet and outlet for the water. The outlet is smaller than the inlet, so the tank fills up. But then at the top, there's kind of a safety valve like there is in a sink. You know, if you try to overflow your sink, there's that little safety drain in the side of the sink. Oh,
like in the bathroom sink?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
In a bathroom sink, they have that safety drain in the side where the water flows out over the top so it doesn't overflow onto your bathroom floor. They have one of those built into it, too. So, but during the time the water is pumping, it will fill up to that top part and then flow out through the top. But then once you kill the pump, all the water flows back out.
The pump is on a timer.
Yeah, the pump's on a timer.
It comes on and off with the timer.
For 15 minutes, you'll have water floating in, and then it will slowly drain out, and then 15 minutes where it's just damp, and then it will do it again, over and over. You know, that's one way to do it.
So it would be like the water draining into the tanks would be more on a timer schedule rather than dripping constantly.
Yeah, that's one option. But you would have to have them... If you were to do something like that, I mean, well, you wouldn't have to, but one option would be to have a fairly strong pump that could handle the head height he needs to reach. But then you put a smaller gravity, you know, a smaller reservoir up there, high up, but it's not that big. And so it fills up and then it kind of drains.
And then it flows into the delivery pipe?
Right. And you could have it on a timer or something
like that. Okay. So strong pipe... Takes the water the height to a storage reservoir,
right.
and then it flows more slowly out into the tanks that he's draining it into, so it can go more slowly like he wants it to go slowly.
Right, and so you wouldn't be storing very much in the pump.
Okay.
I mean, in the that secondary high reservoir. You wouldn't be storing very much, just a small amount. That's one option. Another one is to think about a bell siphon. And if you go on YouTube, for example, and you go and you do a search for a bell siphon in aquaponics, mm-hmm. you'll get to see what a bell siphon is. But essentially, it's a siphon that works when a certain amount of water is in a reservoir. There's a bell siphon at the base of it.
Is it shaped
like a I guess, yeah, it's kind of based on that, the way it's shaped. So that what happens is when enough water gets up above it, it kind of creates mm-hmm. enough water pressure so that it starts the siphon by the weight of the water and pushes water into that siphon.
Kind of like a funnel? Is it shaped like a funnel or something?
Not really. It's kind of like a bell. There's a covered area and then there's a tube under it. And when you have enough water up there, it kind of pushes the water down into it, starting the siphon, and it drains all the water out.
Okay.
And a lot of aquaponic systems have a bell siphon like that. And so it'll fill, and then automatically, once it reaches that point, it flushes, and then fills, and flushes.
Okay, so same basic effect. You fill it up, and then it drains into the other tank.
But it's not a timer. It's based on the mechanics of the water. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And something like that might be interesting to do, too, if he were to have a very low flow rate, and then have a bell siphon, so that it would flush out into the pipes. And
the water delivery pipe.
Yeah, periodically. That would be an interesting thing to think about, to contemplate. Once again, I haven't done those, and so I can't comment too much on them, but just to say that they're interesting, I have looked into them as I've been contemplating our somewhere in the distant future aquaponics projects. And maybe other aquariumaxers can chime in and give us some more information on that. I also know that, just thinking about this, I believe the brand is Tom's, and they produce...
Like T-O-M?
T-O-M, yeah. They produce a low flow rate pump that can be used to pump air or water.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the applications, you've seen like the U-bend type aquariums, I think I've shown you, where you have this, a tube that's intended to join two aquariums. And it has water in it.
Okay, that's I think, yeah.
Like the tube goes above the two aquariums and joins them, and it's kind of a U-shape, an upside-down U-shape. Water goes
from one to the other.
Yeah, and the water goes from one to the other. And the whole tube is filled with water. Right? And one of the ways to do that is to use one of these Tom's pumps, mm-hmm. which will pump both air and water. And you hook up the Tom's pump on an air line up at the top of that tube, and it will slowly pump the air out. It'll decrease the air pressure inside, and then the water will pull up into it till it's full of water. And I don't know what kind of head height one of those could do, but it would certainly answer the need of a low flow rate. Mm. So we might look into one of those. It's just a possibility. I don't know that it would be enough for a whole fish room, but it's something at least to research.
Yeah.
I again, don't have any experience like with that particular pump.
Some good ideas to look into.
But some ideas, and once again, we do welcome ideas from our kind and ingenious aquariumax community, as to quote Tony in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So excellent thoughts and ideas, Tony, and we hope that sparks some thought in you and in other aquariumaxers, and we can help you come up with something that will work for your fish room.
Yeah.
This is going to be an amazing fish room. I'm looking forward to see it,
awesome. Seeing it. It's time for that station break thingy. When I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. Okay, so Andrew in Canada, he says, first of all, thank you very much for the podcast. I've been listening to it for years and I've really enjoyed it. We're so very glad. A few times over the years, you have mentioned the Russian Red Daphnia. I would like to acquire this strain if possible. Do you sell the eggs at all, or the dried detritus from your cultures, or know of a source? I'm in Canada, which tends to complicate shipping of live items.
Well, many well, many times we have talked about the Daphne. Oh, let me back up, though. Thank you, Andrew, for joining us. And what province are you in Canada? Because...
Do they have different shipping requirements?
No, I just wanted to know because, you know, Canada's a big place.
Just for fun.
And the provinces in Canada are big places, too. But, that's, you know, also very true. Just kind of nice to know where, which province would be fun. Mm-hmm. So that when we refer to Andrew, we can say Andrew in Calgary or Andrew in Ontario or wherever, you know, where he happens to be. Anyway, I guess Ontario is a province. Calgary is not. Calgary's a city. But anyway, the point is...
You could tell us the city or the province.
To some place that, you know, he's from. That's not just Canada.
Right. Not that there's anything wrong with just Canada. We like
Canada. No, we like Canada. It's just a little more specificity is nice. If I could say from Toronto or from, you know, Vancouver, BC or wherever he happens to be from.
Okay.
So, that's why. So, yeah. There we go. Let's see. Well, Russian Red Daphne, that's a strain that I culture. At least it was sold to me that way. And, you know, there's a lot of, probably several different species that are being sold as Russian Red Daphne. And my understanding, as far as I can tell, I have two different species or have had two different species that were sold to me under that name. So... There you go. The color...
They have proved to be pretty hardy.
They're definitely very hardy and a resilient strain. I've had them for I don't even know how many years now. It's been several years.
Yeah.
And I've kept several pretty resilient strains of Daphne over the years, but this is definitely one of the three most resilient. By the way, they're called Russian Red Daphne, for those of you who might not know. Russian because they were apparently... initially collected from the alligator pond at the Moscow Zoo. So
they were pretty cold hardy.
And red because their coloration is sometimes reddish. That varies a lot because it seems to vary more on their environment and is not something that they carry genetically.
Kind of like just, shrimp?
Yeah. They, like when we go to the Great Salt Lake and collect the brine shrimp, you can find ruby red, just... super red shrimp, but if you bring them home, their colors will change in a short time.
They're not eating the same things.
It's partly the algae that they eat determines the color, and I'm sure that's true with the Daphne as well, but it's partly also the amount of hemoglobin in their blood, and if there is enough oxygen in the water, the hemoglobin content in their blood decreases, and so they're not as red.
Because they don't have to... work as hard for you.
Right, like the ones I have now, I would not call them red. I'd call them probably sort of orangey.
Yeah.
Lightly orangey. Sort of a translucent orange. Anyway, I would love to set you up with them. And unfortunately, like you say, the fact that you're in Canada...
International shipping gets complicated.
It does get complicated, and maybe we can figure it out. I kind of hope we can, because I think that's going to be the easiest way to do it. If we can just send you a culture. Now, I have sent quite a few people cultures. Generally, they tend to be quite successful if I send them as, you know, live Daphne, not as eggs. They tend to be very successful. We have had a couple of instances where people have set them up and then they die. They arrive, you know, alive, and then they die.
That's pretty rare, though. There.
Yeah. That's happened rarely, and we're not sure what governs that entirely. We've had a couple of them freeze and things over, you know, shipping, and we try to, you know, put heat packs in. We use styrofoam to protect them and so on. But with international shipping, especially to a place like Canada during the winter, I'm sure that would be a little bit more complicated because of the... It's just going to take longer to ship them, and so they're going to be exposed to...
It might be better climates. If we shipped them when the weather's a little warmer, too.
That's a possibility. So, but we are going to pursue this idea of the eggs as well. We're going to talk more about it. Now, I shot Andrew a quick email, and basically I mentioned, I thanked him first for joining us on the show, but I said that basically when we have tried to hatch them from Apipia, both ourselves and to people that we have sent them to. In fact, some aquariumaxers out there, you know who you are, have volunteered in the past to just try and hatch them. Because, first of all, I tried to hatch them a couple of different ways to see if I could get any. And I couldn't get any. And then I sent some out, and they tried it. And we've never had anybody successfully hatch them. I think the closest we got was someone tried to hatch the detritus and ended up hatching seed shrimp, because the culture happens to contain seed shrimp as well. The main culture that I have right now has got the Daphne in it. It's also got amphipods or scuds, and it's got seed shrimp, and there are a few copepods in there as well. So it's got quite a few species. Mm-hmm. And all of them make good fish food, so I just kind of keep them together. And they're actually easier to raise when they're all together. So anyway, I have not ever had a documented case of this particular strain of Daphnia hatching from Apipia, or the resting egg cases. I have had other strains of Daphnia hatch with no problems various times from Apipia, but never these guys. That doesn't mean they can't. It means one of two things. One, I'm just not giving them the right triggers, and the other people who are working with them have not given them the right triggers. Or it's not going to work. And we're going to explore that a little bit here. So let's assume that we're going to go with the eggs for right now. Even though we may be able to figure out some way to send live ones. I don't know if we're going to be able to do that. But if we can, that would be cool. But let's pursue the idea of just the eggs, and we'll go to Andrew's second email.
Okay. So he says that it's very interesting that hatching them from Apipia have failed. Maybe the problem is having enough Apipia or any Apipia in the first place within the detritus. I'm not a biologist. My only background in biology comes from living with a girlfriend who was a biology student back in my university days. Regardless, I'm wondering if you are taking such good care of your Daphnia that they are only having live births. If a small colony was set up in a jar in a window and there was noticeable evaporation, I wonder if they would change their reproduction approach and create more Apipia as the water source dried up. Granted, if the issue is documented, there may be a more complex issue. Being from a northern climate, I wonder if the Apipia needs some temperature cue of some type.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are interesting possibilities to look into.
Right. And let's talk
about
that. Kids
got to do science fair projects this month anyways. We could just do, you know... Can we get the Daphnia to hatch? Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what I've done a little bit that relates to what you're saying. One is that I think that is a good point, because we do have to confirm whether or not the Daphnia are producing Apipia or not. And I have determined that they do, in fact, produce them. I went down before recording the podcast and looked at the Daphnia to see how they were doing now. And I don't see them producing any, but in the past I have seen them do that. I have cultured them in jars. Right now, I have them all in a 10-gallon tank, and they're going nuts. They're breeding like crazy. And I don't see a single Apipium in there. But I have in the past, and I've noticed, in fact, that there are two different colors, which is one of the reasons I believe that there are two different species in there. One of them that produces just pure black Apipia. It almost looks like coarse ground pepper. And then the other one is kind of a light tannish or brownish one with two black dots in it. And I've seen those being produced and have actually collected those preferentially and sent them to people and tried to hatch them myself to see if I could get anything to work. And it hasn't worked. We also tried freezing them. As you mentioned, the temperature cue may be important. We also tried freezing them. That has not worked. I have read at least one account that says that the Russian red Daphnia seem to have lost the ability to produce, you know, functional Apipia.
Interesting.
I was trying to track it down before we recorded because I couldn't remember what the source was, and I have not yet found it. So if any of you aquariumxers out there happen to know where that is, I might have to go back through some of our episodes and look for links that I put up on the website, because I kind of think I put it up there at one point. Anyway, that, at least this one source, indicated that it was difficult or impossible to get them to produce functional Apipia, but obviously it's not impossible to get them to produce Apipia, but maybe they don't work. They're just infertile or something. but I've seen them produce them. And the temperature thing, we have tried freezing them and then hatching them. That doesn't seem to work. However, I've come across a couple of other websites that have mentioned things about this. If you do a search for Russian Red and Epipia, at least one of the websites, and I'll try to put the link up on the show page. I don't remember what the link is now, but I think I'll be able to find it. Talks about leaving a colony of them outside during the winter, letting them freeze solid.
And like then, the water freeze and everything?
Yeah, just letting it freeze solid. And then in the spring, letting it thaw out. And as it thaws out, some of them will inevitably hatch. That's what it says.
Interesting.
Another one says to keep them in the refrigerator for a while and then put them in water of that same temperature and let that slowly warm up to room temperature and that some of them will hatch. And that one says to use, you need to use hard water. Use like distilled water like you'd use to hatch tryouts, for example.
Mm. You have to use hard water.
Yeah, don't use rainwater or RO water or distilled water. But use some nice, healthy, alkaline water, and it will work better. So, I will be in contact with you, Andrew, because I want to see if we can... First, we might as well try it. I'll send you some detritus. We'll work it out. So, we'll be in contact, and we'll see how we can set that up. Because there's nothing to be lost, really, by doing that. And maybe it'll work. And if it does work, then that's a great success.
It'll freeze in the mail, and then they'll hatch when they get there.
We can document, yeah, and then we can document the process. Mm-hmm. So I'll try to see what we can do. We'll keep in contact and see if we can figure that out. And because if we can get it to work, that'd be great. But I just wanted to, go into it with you knowing that...
It might not work.
In the past, it hasn't worked. And so it's just, Aquarimax science. Occurring. We're trying to see if we can have a breakthrough.
Yeah.
And, I think that's about it. We're grateful to Tony in New York and Andrew in Canada for joining us today. And I'm sorry that I implied earlier that Calgary was a province. I didn't mean to imply that. I know it's not. So, let's see. I think that's all for this week, isn't it?
I think so.
Okay.
May your new year be filled with fish.
And may the fish be with you. Ooh, stereo. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.